You're listening to a Fat Gatsby One-Shot on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Cool.
Hello, it's so cool that you're listening to Fat Gatsby, a short, brief podcast with, you've got Dave, you've got Weiss.
Yeah, that's it. You've got us.
You've got us.
Briefly.
In the palm of your hand in the 23rd century.
If you're in the 23rd century.
Yeah.
That's what you have us.
With my main man, Michael Burnham. That he's a dude, right? Mm-hmm. That's totally a dude.
I don't know how it's spelled. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm Team Saru. So. Come on, you knew I was wearing a big Doug Jones hat before I even, like, entered this show.
So. Star Trek Discovery premiered on Sunday night on both CBS and CBS's premium digital streaming channel, CBS All Access. I'm less interested here, unless you want to, Weiss, I'm less interested here in negotiating the politics of, do you think this show is worth $6 a month?
Plus ads,
as I am, just hearing your thoughts, your feelings, and whether, I guess my two chief questions are, A, is it a good show? And B, is it good Star Trek? What do you think?
Well, B is going to be trickier. A, yeah. I think it's genuinely a good show, and I do think it's good Star Trek. I think the trick, and I think what helped me a lot too, like I enjoyed both episodes, and I was happy to not watch it by myself. I think that helped, too, that we were both kind of getting into it. But and this is kind of skipping ahead a bit. But they sort of addressed in the after show a little bit of the darker-ish tone and how different that is to the usually, you know, optimistic at every turn Star Trek. And because these two episodes work as a cold open for this season. And it's their whole idea of this season is to kind of really have this hole that they have to dig out of.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, darkness. And I thought that was a really cool idea. So it's still, like, we have to see the execution thereof. But I thought that was a really, really neat idea to put, like, you know, our protagonist in this horrible spot.
Yes.
You're putting the whole, you know, universe at this point, you know, like on the brink of like brink of war, kind of like very downer, almost Battlestar level, like, you know,
and I guess
the
I
last
should,
half of DS9 kind of gruntiness.
I do want to point out to any listeners at this point who may have only watched the very first episode on CBS, like on broadcast television, that you, even if it means you got to drop $6, you really should find a way to at least watch the second episode, because it's a two-part pilot. That's how it should have aired. Everyone should see this story because it's a complete story. Those two episodes together form a complete prologue to the rest of the season. So if you have not watched part two, turn this podcast off right now, because by the end of that first episode, I was not sold yet, because I saw, okay, well, you know, here's our hot-headed main character making rash decisions, and yet somehow she's going to be proven right. But no. I love that, in fact, the opposite happens.
And it's still, what I really like is that that's all true. That's all 100% true. But she's still making very smart decisions.
She's making smart decisions.
Yes.
She is making
not good decision. Yes.
She, after reasoning this out for a while, what kind of drove me crazy for a while is that she just kept making, like, oh man, she really thinks that she's doing the right thing, but this is not going to turn out well. And I love that, in fact, it did not turn out well, and she now faces really grave consequences. and I think why this works for I was experiencing kind of a disconnect because I thought she's a human raised by Vulcans. She's, you know, when we first see her, she is this like very charming, perfect synthesis of being like, you know, pretty in touch with her emotions, but also like a reasonable analytical machine. And the fact that she keeps making these bad decisions. At first I was like, how does that work? She's practically a Vulcan. She should be logical. She should be making much more sound decisions than this. But that's what's great is that this is sort of this character's tragic flaw, is that she constantly strives, she aspires to the logic of her Vulcan mentors, and yet she fails. And that's the human part of her that is her downfall. Specifically, it is the trauma that she is a survivor of that she is now going to perpetuate. Which is great for Star. And again, the more I thought about this, I thought my favorite captains, their best character work is their trauma, is when they have guilt. It's after Picard slaughtered everyone at Wolf 359.
See, that's
It's after Kirk. It's after Kirk lost his son. It's Sisko losing his wife. It's that guilt, that trauma that drives Star Trek's best character work, and that we got to see it happen right off the bat. Not just in a flashback like in the pilot of DS9, Emissary, where we saw a couple select, but no, we see her think that she's doing the right thing and everything just falls apart. It spirals out of her control because of her guilt, because of her trauma.
And that's what makes interesting conflict, right? Because it's just that perspective, because you see that point of view. And like, I like thinking of this as like reverse Emissary in a way.
Yes.
Of just like.
There's, like I thought for sure by the end of this two-part episode, we were going to see her redeemed, and that we didn't. And that now we just skip ahead to, well, she's a convict now. She's fucked and everyone hates her and blames her for a war. God, that's great. What a great place to start a TV show, first of all. And as far as it being Trek, again, that's, as I said before, that's where some of Trek's best character work comes from, is people feeling that guilt at having let their fellow humans down.
Yeah. And it's surprising with all, you know, as action heavy as it was, I'm still like those little character moments, those little, like they spent time on just like looks and sarcasm and mannerisms, like both Saru and Michael Yeoh, Michelle Yeoh.
I'm totally down with Saru. Michael. He's great.
Yeah.
He is Garrus Vakarian on stage. He's the most fucking... I thought
Garrus
that...
Garrus and Bones just...
I thought he had great makeup work, and there's obviously some very subtle digital effects going on with his arms, I think? Elongating them?
Apparently, I was told about his legs because we haven't seen them yet. But like, he has I'm told he has like goat legs.
Oh,
but like because he's Doug Jones, they don't have like something to like prop. So he's walking on the balls of his feet. And it's just so weird.
All right.
There's just a lot of interesting little like touches, and you know, Robot Dude, it's great.
Oh yeah, that Daft Punk is on the bridge of the Shenzhou.
Yeah, Daft Punk on the bridge.
Samir from Office Space was the comm officer, which
I was
so pumped to see him be a regular character, and then when I realized, oh no, he's never going to see any of these other people again. Never mind. Anything that you nitpick? Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you didn't like?
Oh, sure.
All right, let's hear it.
It's definitely not perfect. Like, I think the biggest thing to me, and I guess it's technically a small thing, and I let it go, is that didn't need to be Sarek. That could have been any Vulcan.
That's what I've been thinking all evening.
Yeah. Like, it's a dumb need to tie that, but...
I don't... if you were gonna choose one character in Star Trek canon to have this sort of piece of connective tissue, Sarek is the logical choice because he's well known enough. But let's face facts: Sarek has appeared in like exactly 5 episodes of Star Trek. across the entire like thing of it.
Yeah.
I think if I'm doing the math correctly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So he is the most, he's one of the most major, very, very minor characters on Star Trek. And so I have to wonder.
And that's what gives him power too, you know.
Well like, yeah, that's true. I think for people, I want to say for people like us who, for those of us who know everything about Star Trek, it does feel wasted, and it feels like you're like, we've never heard of Spock's like adopted human sister up until now. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But then again, then I think of like more casual Star Trek fans who like know who Sarek is, but don't necessarily like feel the weight of him that we would. But then I think, does that fan exist? Are there casual Star Trek fans? Maybe that's there are. I, you know, maybe there's this your hardcore Star Wars fan who is only sort of tangentially into Trek. I'm sure that person must exist. If you had to choose a character to be that connective tissue, Sarek is a logical choice.
Yeah.
I think I love James Frayn. I've loved all of his work. I also, when I first heard him speak, I totally expected to hear his natural British accent. Because when Mark Leonard, when Mark Leonard performed the character, you know, he did it with that sort of semi-British transatlantic voice. So it would not be out of left field to just have a British actor play Sarek. This is also the first time, I believe, that a new actor has played an extant character in canon. Like not in the JJ for not in the Kelvin timeline. I believe this is the first time I can think of that they've had hired a new actor to play an existing character. And so
it doesn't happen on TV that often.
Exactly.
At this point. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a bold experiment just by being that. James Frayn, I think, is a great choice. It just seems silly to me that he's putting on an American accent because it seems unnecessary.
Yeah. I guess in like, as I said, like that's just kind of like, that didn't need to be Sarek, but, let's see.
I hope that pays off though. I hope they find a reason that it did need to be Sarek.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Continue. Yeah. By the end of the, we haven't talked Klingon stuff, yet.
Okay.
Entrances go, I loved Vox's the white Klingons just like son of none out of the shadows thing.
Yeah,
great intro. I wanted a little more like kind of backstory on what's his name,
Takuvma.
Yeah, just a little bit more maybe on him and the Klingons in general, just to add a little weight to the history there. They still came off better than I expected from like the trailers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they are leaning on the right side of having the Klingons still seem like a mysterious, proud warrior race. By the end of the Rick Berman produced, by the end of DS9 Voyager Enterprise, the Klingons had become this foregone conclusion. We all know what a Klingon is, man. We all know what this iteration of Klingons is supposed to be. And it became like, at some point, they're going to say fucking Kapla. At some point, somebody's going to make a joke about eating Gok. It's like, it became a self-parody. So I am delighted to see them get reinvented into something that once again feels like a genuine threat and not just a person in a costume again. But I read on NPR, their television critic is black, and he pointed out, it felt weird to me as a black man to see like these are both probably the most evil looking and also the darkest Klingons there have ever been.
Okay.
He said that made me feel a little uncomfortable that they had to push them like ebony black to make them look this like orcish and inhuman.
This is all assumption right now, but one of the things I really liked was the way it was wearing race on its sleeves, not with the Klingons, but especially when the Admiral of phoned in, and it's just so obvious this white male is talking down
yeah.
to these captains, and it's so uncomfortable.
And it made me feel very uncomfortable, which I guess was the intended effect. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope that they don't relent on that. And my hope is that, like, that's – it's just going to be part of the show.
I hope so, too. I
properly.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess – Star Trek has always had its way of being very on the nose and yet making it work. So as long as they make that shit work.
Yeah.
People use the phrase heavy-handed. I don't think it's that. I think it's the fact that Star Trek is, well, I guess heavy-handed is just another way of saying unsubtle.
Yeah.
But I in that instance, it did feel like sort of a wonderful and very purposeful inversion.
Yes.
Of, I don't know. It stirred all kinds. It made me feel all kinds of things. And I'm not sure how to articulate how I feel. It made me uncomfortable. But that you say it was a good uncomfortable makes me feel better about it.
I thought it was. I thought it was, like, clearly this person, the Admiral, was, like, throwing weight around in an improper sort of way, and we were seeing him as a villain. Like, he was flamboyant. He was, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't put in a good light.
Yeah. Totally.
I love on the nose, purposeful, like 70s social commentary sci-fi. So, like, I have no problem, like, Eddie, you know, drag that half-painted face kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I loved the scene in the brig where she, like, logicked her way through the computer's software.
Yeah.
That was great, like with software that only has a, like, verbal interface. You've got to fucking reason with the computer to let you out. I love that. I thought that was that was great.
And visually, I loved the look of that, like, blown off cell kind of thing too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Really cool. Yes.
And there's a lot of neat, like, even though, you know, like, it's gonna get a lot of, you know, lens flare jokes and such, but I like that it's taking risks visually while still sort of tying it to what the Abramsverse has sort of, like, started as the visual language of Trek the last 8 years,
well,
I guess.
Do you see any, I don't know Brian Fuller's work well enough to know if he, like, works with any particular cinematographers, but I mean, I saw a few cinematic sort of visual clues that reminded me of, like, Hannibal and Pushing Daisies. Did you?
Oh yeah.
The initial pullback through Takuvma's eye, like.
Yeah. Oh, that was so good. Yeah. Very much.
That struck me as very Brian Fuller.
The cinematographer they have on there is one of my favorite dudes. It's Guillermo Navarro, who also works with Del Toro.
Okay.
And I forget what other, yeah, he's very, very good dude. And it was actually, like, he's one of Brian Fuller's guys, and I was surprised he wasn't on American Gods, and apparently this is why.
Okay.
So
yeah,
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, just that it is not shot like 90s Star Trek anymore. Thank God. That it feels like a modern television show is.
Yeah.
And that they are doing anything, in fact, you know, sort of playful or artistic with the cinematography. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gives me a lot of hope for where the show is going.
Yeah, totally. Like, that was something I was really, like, happy with, like, some of those, like, side angles of, like, especially, like, outside with the boots going, like, horizontal.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because they're willing to, like, take some risks.
Yes.
Yeah. And the colors, at least when they pop, are, like, very Brian Fuller, which is also reminiscent of, like, 60s Star Trek.
Yeah.
So it's a nice kind of, like, tie. So.
I cannot nitpick, like, the technology. I don't think there's nothing Fuck it. You know, it was 1967 or whatever when the original series. There's nothing we can do to fucking retcon that shit. Just as long as you've got the annoying radar ping on the bridge, that's enough. That sells to me that we're in the Kirk era. You can have touch screens and not physical sliders. I don't care about all that shit.
Yeah.
Like, that we've got holographic communication instead of just on the view screen. That's fine. I'm fine with all that. I'm fine with the costumes. I'm fine with the fact that everything looks way more modern than Kirk era stuff. Whatever. We just have to pretend that all that stuff looked different now.
There's suspension of disbelief. Two things on that. One, I love that they pulled so many of the old 60s sounds. Just there was a lot on the bridge, just in the soundscape of things. Mm. Two, here's something that bugs me about sci-fi now. just in general, why do holograms skip? Why is this like we have to show that it's like a half junky tech whenever it just like a hologram is talking some form of comm? I'm just like, okay, it's the future. I don't think it's gonna be this janky. You're not dropping frames.
okay. That's a very interesting question because I personally like that because though it would be an anachronism in the future, it is a part of our modern visual language that we assume that most forms of remote communication, even when they're supposed to be perfectly functional. Mm-hmm. Okay, stop. We're accustomed to seeing, you know, streaming video do that. We're accustomed to.
That's true.
So it's part of a visual language that communicates unconsciously to the audience that what you're seeing is it sells it as realistic in our minds, even though if you think too hard about it, it would be an anachronism. But by the same token, it's not fair that doesn't bother me. But what did bother me is when Burnham was like going up a shaft in the suit ready to depart, and they were giving and the helmsman was giving her a little like airline departure speech. That felt like
that was silly
and part of me knows that like part of the charm of Trek is seeing regular people do regular people things in a future setting. Like, you know, we get a kick out of that, seeing people just being real. But like, that was a bridge too far for me. That was, it's 200 years since there have been airplanes for them. No one knows what the fucking, like what the captain would say on a flight anymore. Come on. Yeah. Like that's, that pushes my suspension of disbelief just a bit too far. But again, it's not fair that I think one is fine and the other I have a problem with. That's bullshit. I call bullshit on myself.
Well, I guess what that makes my mind go to is like, one, we were kind of praising like the way they did the techno babble, at least in this episode. Mm-hmm. It felt like it worked well for both like people like us that are kind of like really want it and the regular person who just wants to get past it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Because it was like the actors sold it. It was fast. It was worked into like other scenes. It wasn't just like a scene of techno babble.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah, no, I thought all of the writing was just about as effective as it could have been. There's very little in the writing that I have to complain about. On the whole thing didn't wow me. This was not like going to see The Force Awakens and just like having little eye orgasms every other scene. This was not that, but that it seems like it could be a really good like piece of Star Trek.
Yeah. See, like, it's slowly set in when we were watching where it's just like, wait, this is good. This could be good. Like, we're enjoying this. I like how that look that they just gave and these little things.
Yeah. I don't know if just my expectations were really, really low.
Yes. Mine were.
And so like that, maybe it's just that those expectations were not only met, but exceeded, like makes me super happy. But, just the more I've been thinking about it over the last day, the more I've been just thinking about like that clearly a lot of really smart decision making went into the storytelling here on lots of fronts. Even if not all of it is perfect, even if I didn't love every second of it, I can tell that at some point on that production team, somebody said, wait, this is, people are going to think this, it's shitty if we don't do this.
Yeah.
Or, wait, it would be stupid if we failed to do this properly. Clearly they care. I can tell.
Yep.
And that's more than I could hope for, I guess.
Yep.
Anything else particularly struck you?
I kind of wanted your opinion on seeing this track sort of like influenced by where video game sci-fi has gone in the last like decade or so. Because like I was feeling a little, at least like,
you mean like Garrus Targaryen?
Yeah. I think, like, in general, like, a lot of Mass Effect and Dead Space and, like, 360 on kind of, like, sci-fi, just kind of, like, I don't know. I feel like it's almost part of the overall zeitgeist now. Like there's just things that have wormed their way in, either visually or other. And it's just kind of, I haven't, like, nailed down, like, specific instances, but... It's the first time that I've really, like, thought about that. Because, I don't know, I'm so used to video games, like, riffing off of Blade Runner for 20 years, you know?
Well,
like,
okay,
going in that direction.
Well, I, you know, arguably Mass Effect was one of the first video games to riff on Star Trek that really felt right.
Yeah.
And so there a lot of debt is owed in the reverse direction as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is in large part thanks. I have no way of knowing, but I think part of the reason why Saru reminds me so much of Garrus is that Garrus was almost never played for his alienness, which is how so frequently extraterrestrial Starfleet crew members are there to be foreign. They are there.
Can I say, so like to test out the, because I got to watch this because I was a buddy of mine got the CBS thing and we were making sure that we could watch it sort of at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I put on Encounter at Farpoint, which, you know, I haven't watched in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is. I mean, I had both emotions, but on that very specific thing, just on like, oh, telepath, can you use your telepathy to, like...
Yeah.
Like, and everybody just going down the line, okay, robot, can you robot your way out of this? Can you, like, it's like, okay, we understand.
Yeah. Hey, growly like, meathead man, try not to kill anyone.
Yeah.
Try not to bite anyone's face off.
The subtlety of just throwing people in and letting them be characters and then, you know... Maybe let them be aliens later, whatever.
Yeah, and you know, we got a little bit of Saru's culture. We got a very little cursory bit of backstory on what he is. But 90% of the time, they just let him be a fucking person.
Yep.
A competent member of the crew, just like any other. And that sort of, that's a degree of naturalism that, that obviously reminds me of Mass Effect. I'm not sure if I can trace that back to Mass Effect specifically because I can't think of any other major sci-fi that I've watched on television besides like Battlestar, say. Oh, and the way that the ships warp, the way that they just sort of jump and arrive into place.
Definitely.
That's very un-Star Trek-like. That is a modern sci-fi touch.
Yeah, yeah. It's just interesting, yeah. Yeah, and I think BioWare is, you know, just really good about that subtle personal touch.
Yeah.
So more people that want to, like, pull from that, the better.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like, I'm trying to think. I watched the pilot episode of The Expanse, which is the big sci-fi show.
Oh, yeah.
In the last couple of years, people say it's really good.
Yeah.
But I haven't, you know, checked that out a whole lot. And so I want to say there has not been much out there like Star Trek in a long time. There have been spaceships filled with people and horrific things happen to them. I think more than shows about interplanetary intercultural exchange and exploration. Yeah. I feel like we have not seen that on TV in a long time, and I'm so down for that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was feeling the same. And
they don't always have to get along. I just want to see, throw different cultures together and see what happens.
Yep.
It does not have to be the Utopia Federation, Dodge Grand Voyager, Dodge Grand Caravan that the Enterprise D was.
Yeah. And I mean, Doctor Who is there to sort of do that, but it's just such a very different taste.
Tone, yeah.
And tone. Though there were a few shots that made me really think of Doctor Who, which was interesting. Her coming right towards the camera, like flat, like in space, like being with the jets when she landed, like right in front of the camera. It was just like she was just like flat coming at the camera for a while. I'm just like, that's a very BBC shot. I don't know. It's fun to see who's influencing who right now, I guess. But on the flip, it still feels like very unique too, and I like that.
And I think part of that is that this is a creative team that is brave enough to borrow the good stuff from other elements that they like without fearing that they are going to be accused of not being Star Trek enough.
Yeah,
Star Trek's got to change. It's got to change, or it's going to die. Enterprise changed nothing. And die a short, painful death.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'll give that show a shot someday.
just watch the episodes that Ben and I discuss on that podcast that
we'll
someday continue to keep posting.
I just want to tease because Robert will be listening to this, and I'm sure he's just fuming anyways.
So I guess that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this short conversation. I hope you got to see the first couple of episodes of Star Trek Discovery. Go ahead and share your thoughts with us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you want to talk about whether or not you think this is worth the money, I do have thoughts about the digital distribution, but I'd rather just discuss the quality of what we saw outside of the politics of so we can have that conversation at another time if that comes up. But until then, I'm Dave.
I'm Weez.
And we're Fat Gatsby. See you, everybody.
Bye.